Hey, this is Jen Johans at FilmIntuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen. Well, it is such a joy to have my good work buddy, Patrick King, with me today. Pat is a bookseller over at Poison Pen with me. He runs some of our book clubs. He's super popular. He's probably like a ninja as far as figuring out the best book to introduce people to. And he works in IT during the week, so he's kind of a jack of all trades. PK, how are you doing? Thank you so much for being here.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on this. This is really a great honor. Yeah, of course.
Mean,
we've known each other for quite a long time. I mean, you were a customer before you were working for us, but you know, it's great to I love working with you. You're a fantastic person. You're just so nice to all of all the customers, and you're really easy to work with. So
likewise,
it's a joy. So thank you for having me on, and let me talk a little bit about one of my passions, which is, oddly enough, if I'm not reading or watching a movie, I'm playing a video game. I've grown up with them all my life. So for me, it's sort of a passion, and it's sort of fun to see Hollywood sort of take video games and translating them into movies. I think today we've got some examples of maybe some things that are great, some things that are not so great, but might be a guilty pleasure for some people. It's a challenge, but the thing is that the video game industry brings in more money than all of the sports teams and Hollywood combined. Right now it's probably one of the world's favorite pastimes in terms of passing time. And so it's sort of fun to talk about how those have translated into the big screen.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I should say is PK is my age. We're kind of the 1981 club. We also have another buddy who works in shipping there, Ian. Hi, Ian, who is also exactly our age. So we kind of have similar sensibilities of growing up with these games. I remember Atari. I think that was our first system in Naperville, Illinois in the early 80s. Then we got Nintendo for Christmas. And one of our favorite memories is when we finally bought Sega. It was my brother, myself, and my mom went to Toys R Us. And I don't know if you remember, you had to like get the ticket and then bring it up to the counter to get your console. And we got it ahead of time for Christmas. And we were surprising my dad. And so for like 2 days before that, we were looking at each other and whispering Sonic, and then the other person would go the Hedgehog ahead of Christmas. So lots of good memories with that. Do you remember your earliest video game memories, PK?
Oh, yeah. You know, I remember as a kid growing up with our Atari 2600. That's what we had. I remember, I played Space Invaders to no end. I loved Space Invaders as a kid. I was actually really good at it. Mm-hmm. It got really, really hard as time went on. I'm not nearly as an elder millennial, as I like to say, our reaction times have really gone down a little bit, but
yeah,
playing that like crazy. I loved baseball. There was it was like Water World or something like that, where you played and you tried to solve, it was Sword Quest Water World.
Okay,
and
I don't know that one.
Famous series where Atari, whoever finished the entire series and can prove it with like a camera shots or something like that, they were supposed to win like a golden sword and all sorts of stuff.
Oh wow!
And it was a neat time to game, because I think they had a lot of extra money and not a lot of time to deal with it, or know what to do with it. So they did some kind of outlandish sort of sweepstakes.
Uh-huh.
But I remember for hours playing Atari baseball too.
And I do remember Atari baseball. I was addicted to Frogger. That was my favorite as a kid.
Frogger was great.
Yeah. Another, Chris Cantwell, who, did the show Halt and Catch Fire. He was a guest. He's our age exactly as well. And I think he was talking about his show set in the like 80s and 90s, and there's like a Pong situation. So I do remember vaguely Pong being a thing. I think it was like my dad's friend had that. But Atari is my earliest. Do you remember when you got Nintendo?
Gosh, I think I was 7 or 8, I think, and we were living in Grand Junction, Colorado. And I was so excited, because that Christmas we mom and dad saved up, and that was my gift. And it came with the track meet and Duck Hunt
Duck
and
Hunt.
then Super Mario. And Super Mario was just amazing, as and
I
the
loved it.
technology going from, the Atari. I don't know how many bits it was, but then into the 8-bit realm, that was really exciting. And then as time went on, I got the Sega Master System, I got the Sega Genesis. I was mostly a Sega kid growing up,
Yep, me too.
and for a birthday 1 year, I got the Super Nintendo, and that just blew my mind, because Legend of
My
Zelda,
neighbor had that, and I was so jealous, I remember.
oh, Link to the Past was wonderful, and Super Mario World, and I just loved going to Blockbuster or the local grocery store. We did a lot more at the local grocery store and renting
Yeah, stuff was always cheaper
weekend.
there.
Yeah. And just renting a game for the weekend and playing it. It's actually how I got my copy of DuckTales for the Nintendo.
You bought the used, yeah.
No.
Oh.
We just didn't return it, and then my dad
Oh,
sent a bill, and he's like, no more for a while. So
that's
I didn't rent for the rest of the year, I think. But yeah, so I have this one, probably one of my all-time favorite games was DuckTales, where you play as Scrooge McDuck and you jump
fun.
around on a pogo, your cane, but it acts like a pogo stick, and you jump on enemies and you find treasure. And the OST for it, especially when you get to the space level, was just amazing. I mean, the music for that game was phenomenal, but Capcom always did a great job with music. And so yeah, and then just over time, I mean, it's a collection of mine. Right now I think I have over 500 games
Oh,
in my
wow.
collection. Not all of them are played yet. They're in the backlog. They will be opened at some point
It's
played.
kind of like film critics when we buy too many movies and like some are still in the cellophane and then we feel bad. Yes.
Exactly. I'm sort of the same way, but with every intent to play all of them. Maybe when I'm retired is kind of the, because I probably get maybe 2 to 3 hours, maybe a week. It depends on what I actually play. So it's
Yeah, he
for me.
works nonstop, I should say. My goodness, between both jobs. Yes. And you also run a couple of our book clubs, which are a blast, but it requires a lot of reading. I mean, he loves reading, but
Yeah. Exactly. So,
yeah.
and I think what I really like about video games and what I love about books is that combination of story. And, whereas books sort of take you on a guided tour, especially nowadays, I think games take you on a, they're very personal in some ways in terms of what you do and how you play, and how the story will progress, but also sort of your interactive. That interactive playing sort of leads into kind of your own sort of personal story, which I think is really a lot of fun. And I think that's one of the reasons why games have had a hard time translating to screen, because I think that, we're so focused on the story itself and our own interactions with it, that it's hard to see somebody else's take or take on a franchise or characters that you really like.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
so I think that there's really been a very interesting evolution. I think what we're going to talk about today,
Yeah,
I'm
from
really
video games to
curious about.
movies.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's one of the neat things about film, is that you get to do, you kind of, you spin it, but also it's a great way to introduce people to these characters, these IPs. You might have friends, family who play it, you have no idea what they're talking about, and you could watch a 2-hour movie and sort of catch yourself up and at least know who you're talking about, maybe. And there's definitely a certain level of nostalgia as well about the movies that we're going to discuss today. Because I think I chose four of my favorites. The quality is suspect for some and my movie taste, maybe, but
Yeah, no,
we'll
you're fine. Yes, for those listening, I mean, we could have gone a million different ways. There are so many movies that are based on video games, of course, but we went with Lara Croft Tomb Raider, the one with Angelina Jolie, Resident Evil with Mila Jovovich. Then we're talking about the Sonic the Hedgehog movie and the animated, the newer Super Mario Brothers movie as well. So do you want to start us off with Tomb Raider? See, this is a game that, just like Resident Evil, I had not played either of these games. So I'd
Right.
be interested, yeah, to
The
hear your
Tomb Raider is
take.
really interesting because it was sort of a cultural phenomenon back in the
Yes.
1990s. What it did in terms of a game sort of revolutionized how we did things in a three-dimensional space and working with camera angles, things like that. So if you try to play nowadays, I think that it's a real struggle because you've got older, what they call tank controls, which means, sometimes forward will take you back will take you forward, things like that, where
Okay.
you have to sort of rewire your brain a little bit to move your character. But Lara Croft was probably one of our first major female heroines in a video game.
Yes, that
And
isn't a princess or isn't, yes.
right, and she's got two side guns. Eventually, as the first game progresses, you can get a shotgun, some other things, but really she is sort of a female Indiana Jones,
Yeah.
exploring a tomb and trying to find a lost artifact before the bad guys get it. And as Lara Croft is sort of a gray character because she hunts and grabs these architectural or archaeological, excuse me, objects
Yeah.
For her own personal gain, but and also in a way to, she is a preservationist, so to speak, as well. So, she was a kind of a sex icon in the 90s.
Yes, my
Playboy had their
gosh.
own spread with Lara Croft, which I always thought was kind of gross and a little
Who did?
Playboy.
Oh, wow. Okay, with the animated, wow.
I mean,
You know,
her
Angelina
pointed.
talked about that.
Her
Yeah.
pointed chest was all the rage, apparently, in the 1990s.
Yes. And that actually got a bunch of comments on the movie because Angelina actually, in interviews, she's like, well, Lara Croft is double D, 36. I'm 36C, so I did have to wear a padded bra, but we brought down the. She had to like go in depth on what they did with Lara's chest, which I thought was really funny.
And that's the sort of thing where I know that in this movie they were really trying to keep closer to maybe who Lara Croft was.
Yeah.
And it was definitely a movie of its time. I mean, Angelina Jolie throughout the entire movie, no matter what, is very put together, so to speak.
Yeah, she's gorgeous. She's a badass. She had some issues. She said my character wasn't sexy enough, and I guess this movie was cut all to hell. It was chopped down from its original form. It had a trailer with several scenes that weren't even in the movie, which happens sometimes. But the guy who cut this and then cut also Mission Impossible 2 for John Woo, let me see. He wound up directing Star Trek Nemesis for the trouble of chopping down these movies. And I know there was also a lot of controversy on how sexy they should make Lara and also the music for the film. So what did you think of the music in this one?
I really enjoyed the music. I thought that a lot of it fit the scenes. I enjoyed not only the orchestral OST that was in the background and sort of kind of built and felt, gave you that mood. I loved when they brought in sort of that heavy metal soundtrack, especially in those
Yeah.
action scenes. And I thought that that was a great touch associated with it. You've got to admit that in the opening scene, where Lara is
Yeah,
fighting
you
a
think
robot.
she's, yes, you think she's somewhere exotic. Yes.
No, she's in her house in her
Yep.
own danger, version of the X-Men's danger room, so to
Yes.
speak. And, she's training herself for the dangers that would be associated, I guess, with tomb raiding. I guess, go to a Mayan temple, you're gonna encounter a angry robot of some sort.
I mean,
And
of course, right?
yeah, I mean, it's just, in some ways, it's just ridiculous, right? I mean, in terms of the storyline, it's Lara Croft going off and trying to find the thing, the key, right? That's
Yeah, the MacGuffin of the movie.
exactly. And of course, part of the MacGuffin, do we speak about any spoilers in
Oh,
these?
you're fine. I
Okay.
think these movies came out so long ago.
I'm thinking 2001. We're well
We're
past
good.
that degree. But, she finds that her father, who'd been
John
killed,
Voight, her
played
real
by John
father.
Voight, her father, that the key is hidden in a clock inside of her own house. And she has a mystical dream and she finds it. I mean, there are sort of some
It's
things.
very Luke, I am your father, kind of a Star Wars, I'm your only hope. Yeah, we have a good dream that sets her on her mission.
Exactly. And we've got the Illuminati, the bad guys in this film, really, the main bad guys, which sort of mirrors the game in which there was an evil corporation in the first three that she was trying to kind of prevent them from getting a hold of these objects because of the fact that they could gain great power and control the world. So, I mean, there's that ridiculousness of the video game. And so you have to sort of just go with it. And know that these movies are intended for entertainment rather than for deep discussion or even deep analysis, sometimes of why the characters are doing what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of the fun too is the fact that we have Daniel Craig as her, ex-lover, who is doing an American accent, and we have Angelina doing a British accent. So that's just funny when they're in the same scene together. They're doing each other's accents. Ian Glen, Noah Taylor is great. He's the tech expert. I really enjoy the people that are the butler. That's Chris Barry. Hilary Lars Butler is such a great character. The film overall, this one, it doesn't really work, but it's fun to watch her. It's fun to watch all the actors. The Illuminati thing, that was like the deal for one hot minute in the early aughts for a while. Everybody was on about the Illuminati and was it Da Vinci Code, and it was a thing for a minute. But so it's a kind of a product of its time. What did you think of the sequel and then I wouldn't call it a remake of this, but a new interpretation.
So I thought that, this movie here, so Tomb Raider, really great high action scenes, which is a lot of fun. I love the fact that, we are going after the MacGuffin and they take us for Lara to go and find that MacGuffin. I really thought that they had a very strong cast in this film. It's not a real strong script. And no fault to the script writers, it's a hard business to do and it's very hard to write. And they were doing something that not a lot of films before it were doing, and that was translating from a video game into. So I think that they had a really hard job ahead of them. But I think that the actors were so strong in this film. I mean, as you said, we have Daniel Craig, who's fantastic, and the sexual tension between he and
Very
Angelina
good.
Jolie as their characters, as Alex and Lara, really fit really well, I thought, and they did a great job with that. You believed their characters,
You believe their history.
you believe their history, and I think that there were scenes of brilliance within this film. And then I think the second one, which was the Cradle of Life, is
Yeah, that one got better reviews, I know. But I don't know if I
lot of the
saw
issues.
it.
I thought it was better.
Okay,
I thought
yeah, everybody
this
seems to
one
agree.
was a little bit better, but I think that in terms of all in all, the pacing and the action and everything like that, there was in terms of an evolution. If you see the CG in this film, I think that it is very well done because I think they
That's
combined
true.
both practical effects and CG effects when CG wasn't quite there yet. And I think the next movie that we're going to talk about, the CG was pretty bad.
Yes, I agree. And it's I think a really good one you chose because it kind of continues on from Lara Croft. We have another female action character with Resident Evil. It was done, written, and directed by Simon West. There were so many versions of the script. I think even George A. Romero, or there was all kinds of stuff. So many people wanted to make Resident Evil. It was going to be NC-17 if they stuck with the gore from the video game. This is another game, of course, that I have not played. I hadn't seen the film either, so this was my first time watching it. It isn't great, but again, just like Tomb Raider, the cast. I think Mila Jovovich is very good. She has such a good presence. Michelle Rodriguez, of course, she's wonderful. Eric Mabius, James Purefoy is great. So I find there's a lot to this thing to enjoy. I really like the concept. The story is strong, and it seems like it would be a fun game because it's kind of, you get in there and you're trying to, there's a virus that's changing people. And, you know, you need to escape. This was also around the time of, like, you know, 28 Days Later. So we were getting into this idea, I think.
Right. And historically speaking, I believe that Resident Evil came out around the same year in that same kind of time frame that Tomb Raider did. So this one was whereas Tomb Raider was published by a smaller publisher. This game was produced by Capcom. And Capcom is known for Mega Man that we played back in the day, and a lot of really great classic games. And so again, giving us basically the first game in what we would call a survival horror type of game. There was a game that came out back in the late 80s, early 90s called Sweet Home, which only made it in Japan. And this was a role-playing game where you played as four or five different people, and you were going through a haunted mansion. And the idea was that each of your characters had a special ability and a special tool that they could use. And if you could make it through all the way with all the characters and they could all survive the night, you would get kind of the best ending of the game. So when they were thinking of what to do with this game, with Resident Evil, ultimately they decided on a lot like Tomb Raider in terms of the 3D action. But they were going to have very specific set designs and very specific camera angles associated with each of the scenes to sort of dramatically display the action on the screen. Also, your character in the first one you could play as either Jill Valentine or Chris Redfield. Each had almost a lightly different story. Jill's was more puzzle-based, Chris's was a little bit more action-based. Chris could hold more items and physically bigger character, whereas Jill could, she was faster, but she had fewer items associated with her. So it was easier for players to get away from the zombies on the screen. But basically, the first three games take place in locations and what, it's such a Japanese name, Raccoon City.
I know, yeah, it cracks me up.
It's a really funny, corny name. The voice acting in the first game is notoriously bad.
That's what I heard, yeah.
It's very, very stilted. But it was one of the first games that actually brought in, and I'm going to put in air quotes, actors, because a lot of the lines were very amateurishly performed. But at the
Gotcha.
same time, it did some things that a lot of games hadn't done. It relied on jump scares. It relies, the series itself often has a character that is sort of constantly hunting you, can jump in and out. They've done a couple of remakes and remasters of these games. So, they've, really ratcheted up the graphics quality and kind of retold the story in a more modern setting. But the very first one, Resident Evil, has only had a remaster. It hasn't had a full-blown remake done yet. And now they're up to game 9 this year, which comes out. And that's moved to more of a first-person perspective. But what was fun about the film was the fact that they knew what worked with
Yeah.
telling
Yeah, I will.
the story. We don't have Jill Valentine. We don't have Chris Redfield. Those characters will make appearances in future films, but we're dealing with basically a cast of characters that were not related to the game, so that way we could sort of say, okay, this is immediately brought us into, okay, this is an alternate history. This is an alternate story. So that way we weren't nitpicking, well, that didn't happen in the game, sort
Yeah,
of trivia boy.
yeah. One thing I loved with that is being somebody who was completely unfamiliar with this world is Mila's character just wakes up in this mansion and she has amnesia, and so it's kind of like an Alice in Wonderland sort of storyline. This was done by Paul W.S. Anderson. He was the filmmaker behind Mortal Kombat, which was one of the first commercially successful video game adaptations. So they wanted to bring him back after they were trying to debate, who should do it. And if you are curious and you're listening and you're a big fan of George A. Romero, it looks like they're at the University of Pittsburgh's library system. They do have George A. Romero's script and his material for his work on this, but it would have been like an NC-17 rated version. But what you were saying, I think, is really good. This is new storyline. So we are kind of the same as Mila. Like, you are here in this world and you don't know what's going on.
Right. And I loved the fact that they opened it up with basically, you see the crime being committed. You see
Yes.
the virus being
Spread, and
spread exactly after this heist goes wrong. Somebody knows something that
yes.
caused this problem. And but we wake up with Mila not or Alice is the character, and
Yeah.
that's I'm glad you mentioned Alice in
Alice
Wonderland.
in Wonderland, yes.
Also, we'll meet the Red Queen and some other
Yes, which
fun
was not in the
characters.
game, I guess, either.
No, not in the
No.
game, but still, I think worked really well in terms of this story. So,
Okay.
long story short, yeah, her, and then we also have, I'm blanking on his name. It's was it James Purfoy or was it
The one who played Eric Mabeus was Matt. That was originally going to be David Boreanaz from Angel and Buffy, and I thought, ooh, that would have been good. But there was some kind of a scheduling thing.
that would have worked really well. And Eric Mabeus does look like Matt, and so that there's some sort of connection between Alice and Matt, which is
Yeah.
sort of interesting. And you weren't really sure what was happening. We get flashes and flashbacks as Alice's memory sort of comes through in terms of who and what she is.
Yes.
But basically, so this theft occurs, they wake up in this mansion, and then all of a sudden we get a group of what looks like military operatives busting through the window.
Yeah, it's like a Friday the 13th type situation, or like you were saying, you're being hunted, and yeah, but them just going through the window is terrifying.
And coming through, and so they don't know what's going on, and then as
Yeah.
it turns out, we're introduced, and they realize that, okay, Allison and her lover there have both been knocked out with this gas, that they have amnesia, and they're not really sure what's going on. As it turns out, that this mansion is basically an entrance, so to speak, or a back entrance to the Umbrella Corporation, who is the big bad in this entire series.
Yes.
And they're this underground facility where they are working on a variety of different biological weapons and viruses. And of course, the T virus that comes out of this turns people into flesh-eating zombies. So,
I mean, that happens every day, PK. Yeah.
and so, it's in 2001, it seemed a little unreal, or 2002, it seemed a little unreal.
Yeah.
When this came out, and of course, we've been through a pandemic now, and So it's a little bit more interesting to see in
I
2025
agree. Yeah, this plays
because
completely differently now. And I think originally this was going to be called like Resident Evil Ground Zero, but 9/11 happened, of course, so they changed. Like, it was shot at the beginning of 2001, then 9/11 happened, and it was like, let's change that name. So it's just Resident Evil.
just Resident Evil, which made a lot of sense. I mean, in terms of doing that, and but
Names with
it ran.
colons and stuff, it gets confusing. Like Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part One, like, try fitting that on a marquee.
Exactly, and Resident Evil, nice, tight, and they did it. They did the poster in that style of the Resident Evil game as well. So they kept with the font, they kept with the feel, they kept with the theme.
Okay,
I
good.
love the cover of the film because it's Mila Jovovich holding a gun, Michelle Rodriguez looking very sexy. I don't think she ever looked really sexy in the movie. She was always very tough,
No, yeah,
you
but
know.
they did a good photo shoot with her, and yes.
Exactly. And you know, this was one of Michelle Rodriguez's first films, but what I really liked was the fact that her character, she was basically an unknown when this film started, but she looks angry so well. She does that angry look so
Well,
well.
she had done Girl Fight, which she got the award for at Sundance. That was like in 2000. And then right after that, of course, was the first Fast and the Furious movie, but it's a small role in that movie. And so, yes, she was relatively unknown. And she really taps into that anger and that what is she going to do? She's a volatile being. So, yeah.
And she's tough, and really, I mean, out of all the characters that are survivable in this game, in this movie, not game, she would be one of them because she is just so tough as nails about it. And she's very no nonsense. She's very practical. She sort of takes the lead after the main Colin Salmon, who plays the leader of the group. It's killed in action, and they're killed in a very, several of them are killed all at once, and to me, the most gruesome scene of the entire film.
Yeah.
Think about it, that is, this the their death is probably the most gruesome out of all of it.
Yeah, we should point out this is the one that's rated R. The rest of the movies are cool for like families and stuff, but this one, yeah, definitely, if you don't know the game, yeah, you're in the middle of a horror movie, essentially.
Yeah. And so what's interesting is, and I liked the sort of gameplay mechanic that they used where you see them on a map going through kind of like
Yeah, the
levels and they
filmmaker was trying to use similar camera angles, I guess, as the game, and I wouldn't know if they're stayed true. Another thing I really liked, see, I never thought about it too much, but when I was starting out, I was also a music critic, and I was often sent like video game scores. And so sometimes without seeing the movie, I would hear these scores. This one has very memorable, it's Marco Beltrami, who did like 310 to Yuma and stuff, and also Marilyn Manson. So it's got like a real edgy kind of heavy metal, and it does fit. What did you think of the music?
you know, this is one of those where I think that they use the score again really to their advantage in terms of the film itself. When you needed a good jump scare, I mean, using the orchestra a little bit to kind of heighten and develop that tension was really necessary. When I saw the movie in the theaters years ago, I think that that was one of the things that really added a sense of tension to the entire film.
Oh, that's a good
And
point.
again, having that heavy metal soundtrack, I'm not big on metal because metal, you know, kind of makes me a little nervous after a while. So hearing that really engaged in terms of building up that attention, taking it back when you needed to. And especially towards the very end, though, using those really heavy metal scores to indicate that you're fighting the final boss.
Yes, that
So
works
to me,
very well.
I
Yeah.
thought it worked great, and I thought that that was a lot of fun. Now, this is has some very gruesome scenes,
Yeah.
and I read a lot of horror, and
Yeah,
I
but
don't
neither of
watch
us are
them
gore people. Yeah.
because when I'm reading a horror novel, I can tone down the gore. I can
Yes, in
tone
your
down
mind. Yeah.
grossness. Whereas in the films, they're right in front of you. It's the vision. So in the scene where several of the Umbrella Corporation
Employees.
not employees, for instance, the one gal gets her head stuck in an elevator.
Oh my God, I hated that. That was horrifying. That was kind of unnecessary to show us that much. I agree.
But they never showed her actual
Yeah, that's true.
death.
It's like Reservoir Dogs where you're all like, "Oh, when he cut off the cop's ear," and you never actually see it, but in your mind you think you do. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that that was some of the brilliance that they
Yeah.
had, where they were able to tone it down a little bit, but to move away from that NC-17 rating.
Yes.
And then the laser scene where all those people, while the Umbrella Corporation seals, whatever you want to call them, are killed by the Red Queen using lasers. That was probably the most visually intense
Oh, I
scene out of
agree.
it. In terms of the other deaths where you might see a character getting pulled away by zombies, they always fade to black, if you notice. So you get the sense, you see them getting pulled, you see their fear.
Yeah.
Never show the actual act of the
That's
person
good.
being ripped apart or eaten or something like that.
Yeah. Gotcha. So yeah, this one does kind of play on your own mind, like what you think you're seeing versus what you actually see, which is good. Yeah. So
What?
these were kind of the forefront of female action-oriented games turning into films, which is very cool. It was one thing I did love about Tomb Raider is, a lot of women love Indiana Jones, but we didn't really have one. So even though, I mean, she is like a Playboy bunny type figure, her physique, we still have someone who is smarter than the smartest woman in the room, and she is looking for those archaeological finds. And Resident Evil, we don't really know Mila's character super well. But just like Angelina's a striking figure, Mila is too. And I think the casting in this worked.
But in terms of the film and the film franchise that sort of followed,
Yeah, what did you think? I didn't see any.
so there's some that are better than others,
Okay.
obviously. But this is a set of seven films
Oh, wow.
that really follow Mila's character, and then we are eventually introduced to characters that were portrayed in the Capcom game.
Okay.
So we'll have Jill Valentine. I'm Ali Larter plays one of the main characters
Okay.
in the
She was always good. I liked her whenever I
she's
saw
always
her.
good. She's a good, strong character.
Yeah.
And I thought that she did a great job in the action role as well, played really well off of Mila Jovovich. But at the same time, we do get to know Mila's character or Alice better as time goes on.
That's
She is
good.
genetically enhanced with that
Okay.
T virus, where somehow she has a certain level of immunity, where she has, as it turns out, a little bit of super strength and speed. Not enough to
Yeah.
make, she's superhuman, but she is not Wonder Woman. She's not
Yeah.
Superman. She is a fallible character. But at the same time, she's trying to kind of save humanity the best way that she possibly can. And I think that, again, having a strong female lead is great. I think it's a very empowering, but I just
Yeah,
think
we
that she was
really hadn't
a great
had too
vehicle as
many. Yeah.
well. Well, and when we think of video games, we also often think that they're very male dominated, male focused. And so, having kind of the sexy character,
Yeah,
I
it
think
sort of tricks
attracts the
you
male
in. Yeah,
audience,
yeah.
but female audiences also enjoy it because they're like, you know what? We need more strong female character.
Yeah.
And during a time where I think it was very, very male-centric,
Yes.
these characters, even though they were sexy,
Yeah.
they were also
Serving a dual purpose.
dual purpose, that strong female characters with a strong female side, but very in control and a great
Smart, yeah.
message. And yeah, I really appreciated that. And I thought that that was really just, it's a cool combination. I think
Yeah.
that nowadays, I mean, there's that idea of, so many times we can choose our character and we can choose if they're male or female. And
Yes, I agree. And that's kind of unfortunate. Like, Simon West, who directed The Tomb Raider with Angelina Jolie, said, you guys have to keep in mind this was before the Wonder Woman movie. This was before Hunger Games. We had, Supergirl and stuff, but we really didn't have, female franchises or, this kind of thing. I actually really liked the one with Alicia Vikander, the newer Tomb Raider. I thought it was really well done. But I couldn't tell you anything specific about it. But now I'm kind of curious about some of the Resident Evils, so you might have to make a list of which ones are better than others. But should we move on to, the games of our childhood, Sonic and Super Mario? You want to take it
Exactly.
away?
Absolutely. So this talking about both of these franchises for me is a lot of fun because I was a Sega kid growing up, so
Yeah.
I played a lot of Sonic, Sonic 2, Sonic 3, Sonic and Knuckles. I absolutely adore those games. I think that they are a lot of fun. This is during, it's sort of funny because we had 2020 with Sonic the Hedgehog.
COVID, yeah.
Directed by Jeff Fowler. I'm not sure how well it did in the theater because of 2020, but
Yes,
this
it.
was one of those funny things where we had
It was the highest grossing video game film adaptation. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah,
no.
in North America, and then the sixth highest grossing film of 2020. But yes, they did have to move it. It was supposed to come out in April. Wait. No, April of 2019. That's right. They redesigned Sonic because the first incarnation of Sonic was so bad. The visuals, like Twitter kind of tore it apart. And so they decided to go back to the drawing board. But then, with COVID, it eventually, came out in the middle of summer, I believe. So, yeah. Oh, wait. Release date was. I have that backwards. Okay, release date was February 14th. So for some reason they opened it on Valentine's Day, which is funny.
Yeah. Well, it is a love letter to video games
It
and
is a love letter to video games. So this would have been before we knew like what was coming with COVID, and luckily there were, I mean, luckily or unluckily, depending on the science there were big audiences for this movie. And of course you have Jim Carrey as Dr. Robotnik. James Marsden is always a fun presence. I really liked the voice of Sonic as Ben Schwartz, who I think fans of Parks and Rec really love. Overall, this is probably the most threadbare of plots, I would say. Like, he's just kind of a sidekick or a buddy. So I was a little underwhelmed, but it's still, it's a very nostalgic watch because I loved this game so much.
Yeah, and it was really cute. I mean, I
Yes,
think that the
very cute. It's
redesign,
like a buddy comedy.
it is a buddy comedy, and that's
Yeah.
really what it is. So if you boil it down to it, we're not going to talk about deep and interesting plot and characters here.
No.
I mean, basically, we've got a very hyperactive, ADD sort of character.
Yes.
His mind going, Sonic is very fast, so his mind's going very fast as well. And so I thought it was a lot of fun because it was just a cute film and it was a
Just
good
a
family
romp.
film,
Yeah.
one that you can watch for the entire family. I do have to say
Yes.
that Jim Carrey is the highlight of this entire film in a lot
Yeah.
of ways because I think with him playing Dr. Robotnik, he did such a wonderful job playing such a big jerk.
Yeah, he's very good at, like, he just, you can tell he had so much fun doing it. One thing I did really enjoy too is for people who know the game very well at the end, jumping on Dr. Robotnik's ship, which is what you do in the movie or in the video game. So there was a lot of fun things that are throwbacks to the game as well, which I love. I mean, probably not as much as Super Mario. They must have spent like so long. Each frame has at least a couple Easter eggs, it seems like, to the games.
100%. And I think that with this, what they were trying to do was get the feel of Sonic in our world versus in a video game world, so that it sort of balanced or
Fish out of
centralized
water.
the story. The fish out of water, he is hiding from the rest of humanity in sort of a way, and he's a little crazy, to be real honest,
He's kind of an obnoxious character, but I did love the scene, like you were saying, how fast he is when we see him at a baseball diamond and he's like the pitcher and he hits the ball and he runs in the outfield. And yeah, it's funny to see him basically field his own pitch, and his own hit. It's great.
Well, in that scene, I think we've all had those moments where we felt very alone. And
Yes.
I thought that that was a really
Yeah.
beautiful scene in terms of depicting where
That
Sonic was,
childhood.
because and just feeling sort of like, and Sonic is in so many ways, he's, as far as I know, 10 or 11 years old in terms of him actually being, a character. He's probably, 14, I don't know. He's somewhere in probably teenagehood is what you think. But it's really him finding his own family. And family sort of choosing him in a way. And he becomes really good friends with the local cop in the small town in Montana, Tom, who ends up taking him on kind of an ET adventure to go again to San Francisco to find his MacGuffin, his own personal MacGuffin,
Yes, I agree with
which is a
you.
bag of magical rings that, if thrown, can take him to different dimensions and keep him safe, because there's something about Sonic and what sort of makes him special, and that's his quills on his body somehow produce energy, and that's how he ends up becoming a very fast hedgehog, and clearly he is not from our world. We sort of have an Obi-Wan Bambi sort of opening. It's probably one of the sadder scenes I've seen in films, and one that I never like rewatching, but I thought was very sweet and happens very quickly. But that basically his first adopted parent dies. I think could very well be. It was a very life and death sort of situation. This movie has a lot of elements, I think, to, gosh, any sort of buddy film. I often
Yeah, I agree
thought,
with you. And I think setting it in Montana was kind of an interesting choice. You would usually put these, you would imagine, in like a metropolis or something like the American equivalent of what's in the game. And so I just was looking at what Jim Carrey was talking about with playing this character, and he was comparing it to when he played Riddler in Batman Forever. He said, "I wouldn't put one against the other. I think they'd be a great team, but it's like Robotnik, and every supervillain basically comes from a place of neglect, with a feeling of absolute worthlessness that manifests itself in magnificent creations that are designed to control the world, put their brand on everybody, and maybe even get inside your bloodstream with some nanotechnology occasionally." So he's basically a tech bro. Who
he
goes
is a tech
nuts.
bro.
Yeah,
He's
he's
such a jerk. I mean, he
yeah.
really is. And
It was foreshadowing, PK.
sometimes I wonder a little bit about how films sort of nail certain things on the head, but
is funny,
I
yes.
mean, he's so arrogant as a character, and he does portray that very,
Very well.
there's a moment in there where he talks about, him sort of growing up and being an orphan and stuff. And you realize he is very intelligent, and where a lot of his anger and kind of over the topness comes from, essentially being ignored and ridiculed most of his life. And so he's become a bully. And in some ways you sort of feel for him, but he's so mean. And at the very end of the chase scene, that where he's chasing Sonic through San Francisco and blowing up different things, and you know, it's happening, you're like, oh, you know, I'm thinking like, okay, is everybody okay? Are people all right? Because these are explosions that are happening in the middle of the city. You know, there's
Yeah, we're not supposed to think about like the actual carnage or
and the casualties associated with
Yeah, I
something that
know.
I
With
really
saving the day or destroying the city. Yeah, very
I was
casual.
thinking of the Superman movie. I believe it was with Henry Cavill.
Okay.
At the tail end, there's that fight with Zod, and it's so
Like
like
how many people got killed? Yeah.
you just think that, and that's sort of where my mind sort of goes in this film is like, you know, I'm glad they sort of gloss over it. Everybody's okay. This is a family film. Nobody got hurt.
But
Just
yeah,
a lot
leave
of
your
car
logic at the
insurance
door.
claims. Yeah, a lot of car insurance and home ownership, you know, insurance claims. Everybody was fine though. But
Yeah.
I thought that, you know, in terms of, again, as a family film, bringing it in, giving us who Sonic is as a character, I think that one of the fun things about this was that Sonic has usually been our silent protagonist until we moved into cartoons and other media associated with Sonic. So for me, this is one of the first times that I really experienced Sonic as sort of a live character. I was too old when those cartoons started coming out, so.
Yeah, I watched the cartoons with kids I was like babysitting for, and it was a weird experience, but I actually think they did a pretty good job. I guess, you know, this franchise has been so successful, there's going to be a fourth movie. I hadn't seen this one either or Super Mario, so this was kind of you gave me good assignments here, PK. But one thing that I thought was really interesting is they chose the name Wachowski. Is that in the video game at all?
I don't think so.
I was wondering if it was like a little nod to the Wachowskis who made the Matrix movies and all of those.
I
Like,
was wondering that too, actually.
yeah, because it's a very specific name that isn't common. So I was
Yeah.
wondering, yeah.
And when you think about, you know, bringing
A world, yeah.
digital to real life
Yep, you
and
think of
vice
the
versa,
Wachowskis, yeah.
think of the Wachowskis. And
So
again,
that's kind of cool.
some very interesting and creative directors, the Wachowski sisters.
Yeah.
So,
So what did you think of Super Mario? Because that was
so
the other one. This came out in 2023. I missed it as well. Directed by Aaron Horvath and Michael Jelinek,
yep.
who did the Teen Titans Go series and that movie as well.
So I have a little bit of a fondness for this director because I do love the I really like Teen Titans Go. They're a little bit of a guilty pleasure.
They were fun. I had to review a couple like discs of their stuff, and it was enjoyable.
They're very silly. They're very, very silly, and there's a level of there's a definitely a what's the best way to describe it? There's just a level of silliness within this.
Yes.
And again,
It knows it's not taking itself seriously. Yeah, it's not Resident Evil. No.
exactly. This is not, and then again, out of three movies, this is another great one for families. What I loved about this is actually the first movie that I went to see in the theater post-COVID.
Oh,
And
nice. You have good
because
memories of that. Yeah.
and I thought that it was a lot of fun because again we have a Chris Pratt voicing Mario, we've got Charlie Day voicing Luigi, we've
I
got
love
Lady
Charlie Day as
Blake
Luigi. Yeah.
as Princess Peach, and we have Jack Black as Bowser. And so those are you know our four major characters that we've always known throughout
Yeah.
growing up
And
with.
then it adds in Keegan-Michael Key as Toad. We have Seth Rogen, Fred Armisen. So it's just a really lively, fun voice cast, I think.
And this movie is bright, it's colorful,
It's
it's
animated, we
bright,
should say. Yeah.
completely animated, yep, 100%, computer animation. And they did a really, really wonderful job, I thought, with this film, just bringing it to being a film that was just is really, in my opinion, I've seen this now. This will have been my fourth viewing of it. It's one of those movies that's sort of comfort food because it's so joyous. It's a film about friendship, brothership, believing in yourself, not giving up.
Yeah, very positive messages, yeah.
Very, very positive messages, I
For
think, that are
kids.
really important. Jack Black, by the way, is Bowser, and I don't laugh aloud at movies very often. This movie made me laugh out loud. I mean, when he's
He
singing
makes me
his
laugh a
love
lot, though.
song about Princess Peach, and it's just
Yeah.
peach, 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 peaches, peaches, peaches.
Yes.
It's just so
Ridiculous and
funny, and it's
funny.
ridiculous and funny, but very heartfelt and just dumb lyrics, wonderfully dumb lyrics. But what I really loved about this film was that it's just about not giving up. And even when you're kind of considered the odd man out, Mario's shorter than everybody else, and that's where it really, he gets poked fun of and made fun of because of the shorter statue. No, you can't do this. No, you're dragging your brother down. And and it's just about, no matter how many times you fall down, you get back up again and you keep on. God, I sound like the Chumbawamba song. I get knocked down, but I get up again. It's
Oh, top thumping, yeah.
tub thumping, exactly.
Oh no, PK, that's gonna be in my head all day. No, I'm just
I'm
kidding.
sorry. But I think that that's what's really fun. And it's just so bright, so colorful. And every scene has some sort of nod to the entire franchise. And there are things that video game geeks like myself are going to pick up that nobody else is going to pick up. And so, for instance, when they get to the Kong Kingdom, and they get picked up by in that cart, by the monkey in a white suit coat, a la Miami Vice. Do you remember that scene?
Yes, that's
It's
good.
a cart from Mario Kart Double Dash, which is
There are
considered
so many nods. Like, I just
so
love
many.
that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. The very opening scene where they're in the pizzeria, and the pictures on the wall are all from Punch Out, Mike Tyson's Punch Out or Punch Out. Depending on the version that you were able to get your hands on. And so there's Little Mac, for instance, in the back, and there's all sorts of different boxers, for instance. So they do a lot of different nods, and for me, that was a lot of the fun. And I thought
Yes, I
that part of the
agree.
game of the movie. Although my personal favorite character was Fred Armisen as Cranky Kong.
Yes, yeah, he is
Busty Kong's
so
father.
funny. So great. But I think this, like you mentioned how many times you'd seen this, but in a way, you kind of have to see it at least. If you were a video game kid, you need to see it at least twice because, like I was saying, they're going through, it's completely animated and you'll see something in the background like, oh, I remember that from that video game or this one. And I can't imagine how much time, but also the amount of affection they have for these characters. And the legacy, which I thought was so good because I think it'd be easy if you're making one of these to just look at it as a trip to the bank, essentially. But you can tell that the people that made this film especially were completely enamored and they knew the history and they wanted to honor the experience and the joy of all these kids over generations playing it and growing up
Oh,
with it.
it was produced partly by Nintendo and Illumination,
Yeah, so they were authorizing stuff. Yep.
and Shigeru Miyamoto, who is the creator of Mario, was very much involved in the creation of this film.
And they used
So,
a voice too from the original Mario is their dad, which I thought was great.
yeah, Charles Martinet, who he just recently retired as the voice of Mario. What's fun about this is the 40th anniversary of Mario.
Is it really? Wow.
So we were four, or I was three. You can bleep that out. But yeah,
Neither
this
one of
is
us look our age. We're fine. Just ask
okay.
us, right?
Yeah. But what I really enjoyed about the film was just it is a complete love letter, and I thought that this is the movie that got the most right out of all
I
of them.
agree with you. Yeah. I think this was probably the most solid of them.
Yeah.
Then I would say, I think even though I didn't love it, I think Tomb Raider might be probably second most fun. I don't know. It was hard to tell. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I would personally, I would say that Super Mario, Tomb Raider, Sonic, Resident Evil.
Yep.
And
That's kind of the way I would
would
rank them
kind of
too.
be, yeah, because I thought that Tomb Raider in itself was grounded so much in reality that it was a great movie where you could, if you'd never seen or played or were familiar with the IP, you could jump in and enjoy it just as much. I think for those of us who are grew up with Super Mario, and know a little bit about Super Mario, it'd be great. I think that if you were a grandparent or somebody who was not real familiar, I don't think that that would be as enjoyable
I
for you.
agree. Yeah. And I was going to ask you, I can't believe it's been 40 years before I let you go. I mean, I know we chose four here, but are there any other video game movies? We should say that there was a live action adaptation of Super Mario 93. I love Bob Hoskins. That was not great. Although it's gotten kind of cult classic status, so I should probably watch it again. I wouldn't have seen it since childhood. But are there any other video game movies that you recommend?
So, the one that I'm most excited about is coming out next year, 2026, Super Mario Galaxy film. So
Okay.
I'm very excited about that film. I really like the reimagining or the reboot of Tomb Raider with Alicia Vikander. I thought
Yeah, I thought it was
Walter
good.
Goggins, who's in it, is phenomenal as the
I
villain.
love Walton, yeah.
And I think that that was a lot of fun, and it is a more grounded Tomb Raider. It's more like the 2013 reboots that they did with Tomb Raider, Shadow of the Tomb Raider, and that entire, it's a trilogy series where it's
Yeah.
more the origins of Lara Croft, and they're a lot more gritty, and
Okay.
I think they're really fun. They do a great job with in terms of story.
All right.
Probably that one, I have a very guilty pleasure, which it's a really, really terrible movie.
That's okay.
It is god awful, and
But it's the guilty
it's
pleasure.
Dead or Alive. It's with Jamie Presley and Devin Aoki. It's terrible. It is based off of a fighting game where there are female fighters. But for me, it was one of those that was just, it was what it was, and it was terrible. It was
It knew it
wonderfully.
was terrible, but it went for it.
And it was directed by Corey Yen.
Okay.
So
Oh, wow. I love Corey Yen. Yeah.
it has a really wonderful sort of martial arts aspect to it, but it's really terrible, probably a little over-sexualized. In terms of video games, though, there's some really wonderful stories out there for people who would like to experience. I would definitely say the reboot of Tomb Raider in 2013 was a lot of fun because it was very cinematic. The
Okay.
actress who does the voice of Lara did a really wonderful job, and it really brings out kind of her character of how she becomes who she is. And then
Nice.
this year's probably my personal game of the year would definitely be, it's done by a French studio, and it is wonderful. It's called Clair Obscur Expedition 33. This is a story about a group of people who are off to kill a goddess. She paints a number each year, and depending on the number that she paints, the people above that age disappear and die into nothingness. She sort of Thanos zaps them, right? And so Andy Serkis plays is in it, and he's Renoir. His main character's name is Renoir. You have
Okay.
Charlie Cox as Gustav, who's wonderful. Ben Starr, who has really become a big name in voice acting, as Verso, and Kirstie Ryder as Loon, and Shayla Nix as Ciel, and Jennifer English as Mael. And this is done by a French studio, and they did such a wonderful job with the story. And it's very cinematic and very sad
Cool.
in some ways, but it is for those who love French film and a
Which
certain
we do, yes.
gravitas with their plotting. It's marvelous plot, and it's a marvelous way to tell a story. I think for those who, think video games are maybe a little bit of a waste of your time, I mean, I think that they're telling a story as much as film. So it's a fun way to sort of immersively interact with your own film, and I think that that's part of the fun of them.
That's
There's so
cool.
much. Do you have a favorite video game film,
You
Jen?
know, I wanted to make sure that I recommended the documentary, like Left Hand Turn, but The King of Kong, which is about the people in the Donkey Kong tournaments, and how competitive that was. I had no idea it was a different subculture. So be sure to track that one down. But I agree with you. I think
There's a
it's a
lovely
big, there's a
obsession.
lot of them. Yeah.
Sean Astin also did a he was he voiced over a documentary as well, and I believe it's available on IMDb for free. At least it
Oh,
was
cool.
this time, and it was on the history of video games as well, and
Oh,
I'm
nice. Okay. Those are ones that are good to recommend then,
Yeah,
that one
and
and
to introduce people to it, if you're ever, if you want to take that and do a little bit slightly different approach, those are wonderful because it is sort of amazing. And then there's a really wonderful book out there called Console Wars,
okay.
and it goes into depth in what happened in the 1990s between Nintendo and Sega, and what a sort
Ooh, I'd love to
of
read
business
that.
that it was, over who came first. Now, Sega is a software publisher, and Nintendo, so Nintendo sort of won out on that console war, but it's a
Okay,
really
so Console
interesting.
Wars is the title. Anyone who's listening, go to poisonpen.com, hit the shop link, and order it through us. Yeah.
Yep,
Look at
absolutely. Or
us.
any
We're
indie, or any
working.
other indie bookstore, I'd say support your locals, because I think we're a little bit more interesting. We do some more interesting things than some of the big box stores. But I mean, the most important thing is just to read. However you read, read. Whatever.
Yes, and then come in and talk to us about it. We love that.
I'm
Yeah. Well, speaking of talking, thank you so much, PK. This was a
You're
blast. I really
so welcome.
appreciate
Thank
it.
you. Thank you for having me. And I'll
Anytime.
talk to you soon.
Okay.
I also want to thank everyone for listening, especially my patrons who support the show and help fund my research, equipment, film rentals, RSS fees, and more for as little as $1 per month at the Film Intuition Patreon, which is the home base for the show. Other ways you can support the podcast are by sharing, reviewing, and subscribing to Watch with Jen wherever you get your podcasts, and also checking out the cool merch store hosted and created by our talented logo designer, Kate Gabrielle. You can find the merchandise store, including shirts, tote bags, stickers, and more, by visiting filmintuition.com and clicking on the shop link. The show's theme music is Solo Acoustic Guitar by Jason Shaw and is available in the free music archive. Well, until next time, please take care and happy movie watching.
This is Jen Johans at filmintuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen.